Broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Okay, hi everybody, and good evening to you. We're working ahead, you know. Actually, this is the end of this is the beginning of 103. But I just thought I'd do a little segue here because we've been talking about the pairs of opposites, and I think it's worth doing. The glamour we're going to work upon, if I don't forget it here, is the glamour of war. It's a fourth-ray glamour which is instinctive to the fourth kingdom in nature. I've been doing a lot of work in externalization of the hierarchy, and I understand from BL that they are being posted up on Makara. There's about 38 hours of programming from that, from about page 60 to 194, something like that. There's plenty to listen to. And what I have noticed about these essays in the externalization is that they're extremely timely. The Tibetan spends very little time talking about what's going on the ground, per se, between the Axis powers and the Allies and all of that, because the one I'm working on right now is from 1940, a very serious time of the war. And he talks so much about what the new world order must be, how it must be that the hierarchy externalizes, what kind of civilization it will externalize within, what the disciples have to do. It's extremely timely. And I think we will see as we listen to it that even though, in a sense, this war has gone underground and is being fought out on a psycho-mental level, it is still there. And many of the things he warned about are occurring right now. So, you know, it gives us an increased sense of responsibility as we read these apparently old writings, you know, the ones I'm working on right now, about 80 years old. But I'm just amazed at how absolutely current they are and how they point the way into the future for us and what we must do. He just he speaks of two new world orders. One of them on the side of the forces of light, and the other world order sponsored by the Axis powers, which are responsive to the lords of darkness. And it is in great detail what the civilization, our civilization now, would have looked like if the other side had prevailed, and what our civilization should look like according to his anticipations. 9 points on the founding of the New World Order and what it should look like. And I think when we read it, a sense of responsibility will fall upon us, and we'll be wanting to really get in motion to make sure that this can happen correctly. I just want to welcome quite a number of us here today, but just welcoming Alexandra and Anne, and Anna, and Anne-Marie, Antoinette, Ario, Carol, Catherine, Chris, Deborah, Frida, John, Yopie, Karen, okay, and let's see, I have to pronounce this, Karimjoy, it's Marion, I'm sorry if I've mispronounced, Catherine, Lenny, Leslie, Margot, Mariana, Mariut, Martha, Nienke, Olivia, Risto, Susan, Tia, Tiu, Winnie, Yvonne, Azanaidi, and Anne Veronica. Welcome to everybody. And over here on the staff side, we have Michael and BL keeping me honest and making sure that I can be heard and so forth. Just a little bit of an alignment, everybody, and then a segue into our work today, which looks like it may be a continuation of some of the material on the five particular glamours which are assailing humanity at the moment, and it's the glamour of the pairs of opposites. So let's just gather for a moment in the silence. And we realize that the kind of work we're doing is very necessary work, so we encourage it wherever it may be found. And we're working esoterically to help humanity rid itself of the distorted emotions and desires which constitute glamour. Because we are trying to see clearly and in truth and to let the sun shine on the astral plane and dissipating the fogs and the veils and miasmas and all these things that prevent true vision. A great deal of humanity is glamored, and we cannot say that we are free, because it's difficult to really assess oneself. It took the Tibetan to point out to his students a number of the glamours from which they were suffering, and even after the third degree, a few things do remain. So we prepare then to, we're going to work on the glamour of war today, and that is very necessary, because the attitude of people towards each other is often frictional and the opposite of right human relations, and it's all based on a fundamental egoism, which is a mistaken identity and not really knowing who we are. Almost every glamour and illusion you can think of arises from what I simply call mistaken identity. Okay, so that's our little preamble. And we finished last time, and it was saying that God himself produces the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter. I have a pretty wild theory about what matter really is, but I'll spare you for the moment. Suffice it to say that in actuality, if not in reality, they do exist. And also produce the middle way, which is that of the consciousness aspect or the soul aspect. Ponder deeply on this thought. You know, it's subject, object, and the relationship, the relation between. This is what we have to come to terms with and clarify that whole fundamental universal triangle, subject, object, and the relation between. Now, at a certain point, we begin to merge with the object and are restored to the perception of oneness rather than division. If you follow Descartes, it would seem that it would never be possible to unite subject and object. But in esotericism, it is. And that there was an original union there, but the creativity of the third ray is involved with this fundamental triangle, and from it, the entire emanated universe comes forth. The triplicity of the pairs of opposites and the narrow way of balance between them. Whenever he says balance, always think of the sign Libra. The noble middle path, think of the Buddha and also of Venus and Libra, is the reflection of the on the astral plane of the activity of spirit, soul, and body, of life, consciousness, and form. The three aspects of divinity, all of them equally divine. So he's constantly presenting us with triplicities, which we have to understand, life, quality, and appearance or body. But we one day learn that appearance is not real, and it's a projection from within the consciousness of the observer. That gets into the philosophy of it all, but we can be practical about it, without necessarily understanding every philosophical nicety. So here we are on number 43, and it's the 8th of February, and we're on page 80. And I'll read some, you know, and please take notes of anything that you may have wanted to discuss, or, you know, thoughts that come to you, then we'll have our occasion to do that. And a few more of you have come. Welcome. Thank you for being here. As the aspirant learns to free himself from the glamours upon which we have touched, he discovers another world of fog and mist through which the path seems to run. These are the glamours of the path. Yeah. So we actually did finish the glamours of the prayers of opposites, glamours of the path. And I wonder if there's any of us who has not been subjected to them along the way. Okay, another world of fog and mist, you know, which means that we're blinded and we can't see clearly, and we certainly can't see reality clearly, through which the path seems to run, and through which he must penetrate and thus free himself from the glamours of the path. What are these glamours, my brother, the glamours of the path? Study the three temptations of Jesus. Now, I guess, you know, we have to question, were they strictly the temptations of Jesus, or were they of the Christ using his body? Because they were on a very, very high level. But the thing is that whenever the body of a disciple is used, the vacating psyche of that disciple stands by and sees what is being done by the more elevated possessor of the house. So it seems that, you know, you can say they were both involved. It seems oftentimes that D.K. Uses these names indiscriminately and almost as you would not expect. So you have to think, who is he really talking about? The three temptations, you know, the world will be his. He can, you know, strike the stone and he can get bread. He can throw himself down from a great parapet and everybody will worship him, you know, and always the Christ, let us say, had a one-line answer to the temptations of the personality. And so, you know, the world, the flesh, and the devil were overcome in a very large way in the desert. One of them is, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. I think that's, you know, throwing themselves down from the high place and, of course, recovering. And man does not live by bread alone, that is, but by the very word that cometh out of the mouth of God. That is the second temptation. I'm starting with temptation 3 and 2 and then 1. And I can't remember what the world is. Maybe you remember that or someone can put that in. But he says, I'll give you the world. Well, so what is Christ's answer to that? Okay, study the three temptations of Jesus. If you would know clearly what some of these glamours are, they all appeal to the ego and to the exercise of certain powers which give a person prominence and which are noticed by others and somehow just reinforce that ego, lower ego, that he's trying to get rid of. So we do not succumb to these particular things. We do not care to be noticed. We do not, we do not care to be recognized, you know, as it were. That's the third of the three eliminations. Eliminate all tendency to desire recognition, whether from the hierarchy or from your friends or peers or whatever. And that's found in the beginning of Rule 11 in the Rays and the Initiations. So study the three temptations of Jesus if you would know clearly what these glamours are. And they summarize in the world, the world, the flesh, and the devil. Now, you know, so many of the multi-billionaires, what we cannot say, are they subject to the glamour of the world, but they certainly own a fair share of the world and have had to exert a great deal of attention to acquire that. We also know the people who work wonders and are admired for that, and that's like doing something extremely risky and surviving. And then the flesh is there as well. What do you live by? You know, what really comes to you in the second place? Are you in touch with the Word of God, or do you nourish yourself from the lower sources? We could write a whole book on these three temptations, and I'm sure they have been done. Studied the effect that the affirmation schools, which emphasize divinity materially employed, have upon the world of thought. Now, there are some Christian groups in megachurches, very, very wealthy, and basically it's the old Calvinistic idea that if you're rich, it proves that God loves you, you know, and so material welfare is promised to the congregants. And, well, you know, it's a bit upside down, isn't it? Study the failures of disciples through pride. Okay, well, the first one is the world, the material accumulation. Then there is the pride of the devil, the world savior complex, the service complex, and all the various distortions of reality which a man encounters upon the path, which hinder his progress and which spoils the service to others which he should be rendering. And it's, you know, it's so simple, and in a way it's all based upon egoism in the lower sense. It's all based upon identification with the form. And the great act of release is learning how to disidentify with the form. If you can find yourself always as the one within, the one interior to that which is observed, no matter on what level it is, be it the outer plane or the etheric flows or the movement of desires or the movement of thoughts, if you can always find yourself behind and within, and I mean really find yourself there, really feel your position as behind and within, you will be disidentifying from that with which most people immediately and instinctively identify. And, you know, you will be freer, let's just say. Of course, you know, eventually one disidentifies with the causal body, the egoic lotus. Imagine that. We're not even necessarily there in terms of identifying with it, and now we're going to disidentify. Or with the triad, or imagine that the monadic vehicle itself proves to be a limitation which must be destroyed. Then who are you after all? And on it goes and on it goes until one discovers oneself as the true observer, which is a true being, and there's nothing else but it's, you know, that's a great exercise over many years and many lives. Emphasize in your own minds the spontaneity of the life of the soul, and spoil it not with the glamour of high aspiration, selfishly interpreted, you know, it's spiritual ambition, really, self-centeredness. It's all a mistake. Who is that object in the middle of my field of consciousness? Is it I, or is it the relinquished point, as in Leo, ever heading towards the vanishing point until it disappears entirely? That's really what it should be. So, spoil it not with the glamour of high aspiration, selfishly interpreted, self-centeredness, almost unavoidable, self-immolation, you know, you pride yourself on the fiery displays by which you rid yourself of your apparent self. It's all pride, you know, self-aggressiveness, where you assert your point of view so strongly over other people and gain the satisfaction of their acquiescence. Sometimes DK has talked about the first ray mind and how this individual gained a certain satisfaction of having people acquiesce to his imposed point of view. Self-assertiveness in spiritual work, which naturally emphasizes the part rather than the cooperative whole, such are some of the glamours of the path. Okay, let's, you know, kind of make that a little bit visible, because they are so important. And while I'm doing that, you can sort of look at them and see, you know, do I do this? You know, and every one of these calls attention to the not self. Now, there is no such thing really as the not self. Everything is the self. Everything is being. But at a certain stage of development, we have to consider that some things are more self and some things are more not self. And with the not self, with the object, we have to disidentify. It's one of the psychological means of purification, the disidentification exercise, which is popular in Raja Yoga. I have this, but I'm not that. I have this, but I'm not that. So to identify with the instrument is fallacious, and we have to be the one behind the observer until we discover finally, I don't know how long it will take, that the observer is the universal logos itself. All right, so that was the one that was still remaining to be done, the glamours of the path, and I'm sure there are more. You know, they surround the way we carry on our discipleship service. They surround any sense of self-importance that we have about ourselves. You know, we can always be the one who serves and stands in the middle and is observed by others as serving and gain their appreciation and adulation because we are serving in thus in such a way. And all it does is simply emphasize the parts rather than the whole. We're on our way to appreciating wholeness. And if we get caught up in misidentification with the instrument that we are carrying around, well, we are stifling our own progress. We are obstructing our own possibilities when we do that. And we cannot see the truth, the reality of the wholeness, because we're just stuck on the part. And that is really the problem of glamour. It is mistaken identity and the desires arising from mistaken identity. You know, I was reading a lot about World War II and the superiority complex that Germany had. I would really suggest that you go into that book around somewhere in the 180s, you know, and early 190s, and look at what Hitler had planned for a world civilization. And if that doesn't horrify you and get us, all of us, doing everything we can, then I don't know what will. All right, we've been then through five glamours. And I don't know how far back I can go here, because usually I get stuck somewhere here trying to find the glamours. There are five. There it is. Okay, good. The glamour of materiality, we have discussed. The glamour of sentiment, we have discussed. That peculiar liking or disliking without really seeing the soul of the individual. The glamour of devotion, well, it could be one of the glamours of the path, but it's particularly connected with those strongly endowed with the sixth ray. The glamour of the pairs of opposites and the warfare which goes on between the opposites and the wretched disciple or aspirant in between this ongoing war with all of its highs and lows, so that no real stability can be established, but it's always fluctuating. And in that unsettled condition, no one can see reality. And then what we've just gone over, a little bit of what he calls the glamours of the path, a very short section, but indicative of what many of us have encountered and may still encounter. There is such a thing, as what you call an inner monitor, and it's always watching. And when we are in danger of trespassing a line that should not be crossed, the monitor will speak, and we had better pay attention to the monitor, because it warns us on the basis of our experience and maybe something of the intervention of the angel of the presence that we're about to go beyond what the law allows, and or what wisdom would sanction. And we don't want to do that. So we stay on the straight and narrow path during our training as much as possible, and make sure that we bring ourselves to the right condition, rather than worry about the condition of our fellow disciples. That's their business, and they'll have to take care of it. Okay, I'm going to go on a little bit more. We're going to come up on some other types of glamours, if we can call them that. Excuse me. Next, we will consider a glamour on the etheric plane, and also the theme of the dweller on the threshold. And there he says some really surprising things. So when we get there, I'll point them out to you if you don't see them already. And thus complete the brief outline of our problem, which the first part of this teaching was intended to convey. The trouble is, glamour is so subtle, so elusive, that we always think it's something that pertains to someone else, and it doesn't, doesn't pertain to us at all. But maybe when we see the results of our behavior, we may know that we have been functioning under some kind of glamour after all. What does he say? Criticism, self-pity, and suspicion. These are three main causes of glamour. I should reverse them. Suspicion, ray one. Self-pity, ray two. Criticism, ray three. Of course, he comes up with many other causes of glamour, but at certain points in the reading, he nails these three particularly. And we all maybe have a tendency towards one or the other. I've dealt with a lot of first-rate people, and I know, that they have a peculiar tendency towards this imagining motives behind people's suspicion. I'll tell you a little story. Helena Rorick and Alice Bailey were friends for a long time, but something happened. And Helena Rorick began to suspect Alice Bailey, as if she was channeling some dark magician called the Tibetan. It seems ludicrous to us, knowing what the Tibetan has written, and maybe she didn't, and so forth. But that suspicion that Alice Bailey was not on the right track poisoned a lot of relations between the Agni Yoga people and the Bailey people. And still to this day, that suspicion hovers, and it has to be dissipated. Now, I'll tell you what, when I was working with the Agni Yoga Society in New York for quite a number of years, I knew Daniel Anton, wonderful man. He recently passed away. He was the head of the Agni Yoga Society as a whole. And he always felt that he belonged more to KH and was on loan into the society. Maybe it was true. But I never found in him anything of that nature. he could accept what Agni Yoga said. He could accept, you know, within reason, what Alice Bailey was saying. And I think we have to be very inclusive, you know. We don't want to accept what is glamorous, because there's so much of that nonsense out there right now. So we have to have discrimination. But at the same time, when something of value shows up, we have to take it in. Now, we pretty well know from all sources that Master Hilarion, through a disciple called Mabel Collins, wrote this book called Light on the Path. It's a very militant little book. Should we reject it because Hilarion wrote it, you know? Shall we reject Blavatsky because we are students of Bailey, or Bailey because we're students of Blavatsky? All of that is just nonsense. We have to run things through our evaluator and see with real discernment what carries the note of the teaching, no matter what ray it may be upon. And if it doesn't say everything that the profound occult books of DK say, then okay, it doesn't. It says something else. So this is taking a step away from the glamour of criticism, which is, what does he say, that dire producer of misery, something like that. Criticism, that dire producer of misery. And I guess he knows wherein he speaks, whereof he speaks. Okay, now let's do a little more. Before taking up this subject in some detail, I would like to add something to our previous consideration of the problem of glamour. In your last instruction, I elaborated somewhat upon the subject of the various types of glamour and left you with you the concept of their great importance in your individual lives. Well, we perhaps are not as free of glamour as we might think we are. Those five glamours listed there have to be reviewed, and we have to evaluate ourselves in terms of what we would find if we are very, very perceptive. The battlefield for the man who is nearing accepted discipleship, or who is upon the path of discipleship in the academic sense, is primarily that of glamour. Now, when can accepted discipleship occur? Well, you know, there's no hard and fast rule, but it looked like somewhere between the first and second initiation, and yet it's possible to go beyond the second initiation and not even be an accepted disciple. He says it all has to do with your relationship to a particular master, why you might be taken in as an accepted disciple. When does the second initiation occur? It can be many lives after the first, or it can be the next life or two. It's there's no pinning it down. The time equation is very much in our own hands, and it's related to our ability to really sacrifice. What is sacrifice? Yeah, you know, I've run into some marvelous things here in the externalization of the hierarchy. Just amazing. But basically, it's all about forgiveness. And what is forgiveness? It's not pardon. It's not pardoning anyone or being pardoned. It is the habit of giving all you have of a high quality to others so that they can rise. That is what real forgiveness is, and it's related directly to the giving of sacrifice, the giving of what is sacred within you, and the de-emphasis upon what is not. So in between, and see, only you will know whether you are really forgiving, whether you are really sacrificing. Something may look like a sacrifice to someone who is the observer, and only you will know whether it is a real sacrifice. That doesn't mean that the ordinary understanding of sacrifice should be dismissed. You know, in the temple, the Christ was pointing out to his disciples in regard to the widow's mite. The Pharisee gave a lot, and the widow came along and gave a little, just a little. And he asked his disciples who gave more. Well, of course it was the widow, because she gave all she hath. And the Pharisees just gave as it was comfortable to give. So, you know, when you're putting yourself under stress, DK says, give until it hurts. He really said that, and he said it more than once. Give until it hurts. It won't hurt the soul. You know, we're talking about the personality. And when do you know that you've poured out all that you can rightly pour out in a circumstance? You'll know it yourself, and no one else will be able to tell you. And these are the things that will make the new group of world servers successful and forestall the possibility of war, basically. I've also, you know, I can't help it. I'm deeply into this book, Externalization. It's a marvelous book. The very first invocation that the forces of light bring illumination to mankind, that the spirit of peace be spread abroad, that men of goodwill everywhere meet in the spirit of cooperation, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm forgetting a little bit. May forgiveness, that's it. Forgiveness on the part of all men be the keynote at this time. May power attend the efforts of the great ones. So let it be and help us to do our part. It's an amazingly powerful solar invocation. It is so powerful that a number of members of the hierarchy didn't want it released to humanity, fearing that those who were unable would be overcome by it. And that's the very first of the invocations. So I certainly am going to be an advocate for bringing that back into usage as much as possible. And also the second very militant first ray stanza made in 1940. We'll be discussing those as we go along. Anyway, there is a battlefield. We're nearing accepted discipleship. Somewhere when the second initiation may be in sight, or maybe halfway through that span of either many lives or maybe shorter, time equation being in your hands. And the battle is with glamour. So that by the time the second initiation is reached, many of the major glamours will have been dissipated. The major problem and its solution is imminent and urgent for all disciples and senior aspirants. What is a senior aspirant? Well, maybe, you know, one who is approaching the first degree, maybe one who has gone a little beyond the first degree. Let's just say that sometimes the true disciple is only an accepted disciple. And up to then, it's a probationary disciple and the senior aspirant. It will be apparent, therefore, to you why the emphasis has been put during the Aryan Age upon the necessity for the study of Raja Yoga, the kingly science of the soul, right? The illumined mind and so forth, the yoga of the mind. But more than Jnana Yoga, which is the yoga of knowledge, it's the yoga of the soul-infused mind and the powers that come with it. So why has this study of Raja Yoga been emphasized? It should be obvious to us. And the cultivation of submission to its discipline. I mean, just because we're interested in the new Agni Yoga, the yoga of fire, and we are, it's based upon Raja Yoga. And so one of the books we always carry with us, you know, is the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, the Light of the Soul in Alice Bailey's commentary. Only through Raja Yoga can a man stand steady in the light. Of course, this is very important in the dissipation of glamour, correct? Because, you know, I stand within the light and I never leave that, and, you know, I'm protected thereby. Only through Raja Yoga can a man stand steady in the light, and only through illumination and the achievement of a clear vision can the fogs and miasmas of glamour be finally dissipated. And the illumination will come through Raja Yoga. So the study simultaneously of Raja Yoga and the dissipation of glamour go hand in hand. Only as disciple, the disciple learns to hold his mind steady in the light, and as the rays of pure light stream forth from the soul, can the glamour be discovered, discerned, recognized for what it essentially is, and thus be made to disappear as the mists of earth dissolve in the rays of the rising sun. It's a beautiful idea, and you've seen it happen too if you've ever been up very early just before dawn and the surroundings are covered by some kind of mist or fog, and then the sun begins to rise and there's the dissipation. It's a perfect symbol. As the sun rises, the mists disappear. And that's why I always, after working with that beam of light, I'd like to see the sun shining over a cleared landscape. So we have to learn how to hold our mind steady in the light. It's not necessarily easy. And we have to be connected with the soul before we can do this work and actually be the soul. Because glamour cannot be easily discovered, discerned, or recognized for what it is, usually. That's the problem. So it evades us. You know, it's very slippery. It's very Neptunian in that sense. We have to be very sharp, very discerning to notice it. Therefore, I would counsel you to pay more adequate attention to your meditation, cultivating ever the ability to reflect and to assume the attitude of reflection held steady throughout the day. What are we reflecting? What are we reflecting upon? What are we reflecting? We're reflecting the higher worlds within our mind. And, you know, this continuity of consciousness, even while we're doing many, many other things, we can slip and fall back into glamours unless we have this continuity of consciousness. You would find it of real value to ponder deeply upon the purposes for which the intuition must be cultivated and the illumined mind developed, asking yourself if those purposes are identical in objective and synchronous in time. Okay, there's a little hint there. And generally, the dispelling of illusion is having to do, the intuition dispels illusion. And the clear beam of mental soul light dissipates the glamour. And we can use those words, but we have to think carefully, what do they really mean? You would then discover that their objectives differ. And the effects of their pronounced unfoldment upon the personality are likewise different. Glamour is not dispelled through the means of the intuition, nor is illusion overcome by the use of the illumined mind. Now, that's an important statement. Matter of fact, once he says, if you throw too much soul power into the glamour, the intuition is thrown into the glamour, it can make matters worse. So we have to be very discriminating, very careful about how to do this. Glamour is not dispelled through the means of the intuition, nor is illusion overcome by the use of the illumined mind. Okay, because we'd be working on the level of mind itself. We're working always from the level above, and from the level above we can do something. The mind is above the astral plane, and we can do something with our clear soul mind vitality beam. The intuition is above the mind where illusions occur, and so from that position, elevated position, we can do something with the thought forms in the mind which are erroneous, i.e. illusions. The intuition is a higher power than is the mind and is a faculty. Oh, goodness, this is interesting. And you know, I'm going to put it off till next time, because I just think that it is really worth considering in depth, and I fear that if we get into it, we'll be rushing things. So whatever page we may be on here, I'm not doing too well discovering the page. Does anybody see that? Michael, do you see the page? I wonder where we are here. I should have the page right in front of me, but I don't seem to have it. Page 81. maybe 81. And does anybody see an 82? Do I see an 82? yeah, I see an 82. Okay, we're right on page 81. Now I'll go back to whatever page it was we were on to begin with. Was it page 70 or where was it? No, here it is. Page 80. Okay. Not as far along as I had hoped or thought, but it's better not to rush. Better not to rush so that assimilation can really occur. We have not only to be skillful in wielding the soul energy, but we have to really know mentally what we're doing and be in such an alignment that the brain is involved as well. I mean, before saying any of the great words of power, our alignment is in question, because otherwise we're just saying words, you know, and that is not terribly useful. So, okay, so 80 to 81, not a long way, not a long way, but okay. The subject matter is very interesting, and I hope we have absorbed a little bit of it. And this looks like add 7 and we get 15. And next time it will be the morning schedule. Now, you all know how this is being done now. On Friday, I'm dealing with the dissipation of glamour. And on Wednesdays, we are alternating, for the moment anyway, with the science of triangles and the normal triangle meditation, which is the practical side. Okay, so morning. Okay. Right. Now, let's see how far we have gone here, because certainly it felt like we were going further than we did. We're almost to page 82, and we began with the glamours of the path. Okay, so what I'm going to do is make these smaller, so there is a possibility that we may see them under the eye, perhaps, and maybe not, maybe not, but let's just see. Okay, and there it is. All right. Uh-huh. There it is. Glamours of the path and some other material. We'll not ever get it all under the eye at once. Okay, friends, maybe you have made some notes or something that you might like to discuss a little bit, and I'm open to that.
Leslie has a question. She wrote a question.
Oh, a question. Okay.
It's interesting that the first book of Agni Yoga, Leaves of Moria's Garden, Volume 1, was also called Illumination.
Uh-huh. Okay.
A seamless transition from Raja to Agni, question?
It sounds good to me. Well, you know, who wrote that? Now, I do believe, you know, I wish I had so many opportunities to talk to Daniel Enten, and I forgot to ask him some important things. But it seems that Madame Rorick didn't write those first two books, that they were written by Nicholas Rorick. And I may be wrong, but yes, right. Daniel seemed to say, right. Okay, you're saying the same thing that I'm saying, or maybe I think you're saying that. I believe that Nicholas Rorick took those things down. And, you know, so how did the Tibetan describe it? He said, with regard to the Agni Yoga teaching, that Master Moria was responsible for some, word for word, that the overshadowing of the publishers by Moria was responsible for other of the writings, and that some the publishers simply put in himself. Okay, so good. So you talked to Daniel, and good, that's confirmed. All right, that's good. I got the same, my email. Oh my goodness, we're going to see who I've been corresponding with here. Mostly students, you know how it goes. All right, thank you. There's some things that Yeah. All right, very good. Now what's visible, Leslie? Just this, huh? All right, I'll go back to this. And maybe, thank you.
That's I'm glad better. We both talked.
Yeah, that's better. Okay, very good.
Yvonne has her hand raised.
Okay, now let me get there. And I'm sorry. There's a lot of you today. Is it Yvonne? Yes, Yvonne. Oh, there you are. Okay, good. Okay. Go ahead. You're good. Go ahead.
Hi, Michael. I have a question. Hitler, you were talking about the different stages, the paths of discipleship, probationary and accepted. And where was Hitler? I understand he studied esoterics before he went off the left-hand path. And what's the last point that you can be trusted? At what point?
Okay. You know, when you become something that is not a hazard, because of that time you're a hazard, it's after you've passed the temptations in the desert, the world, the flesh, and the devil. Then you can be trusted, and before that time, even after the second initiation, you are considered a hazard. Now, the old story about Hitler, you know, and there are so many stories, but that he was in the opera Parsifal, if you're familiar with that, by Wagner, there was a fallen knight of the Grail. And his name was Klingsor, and he had in his possession the Spear of Destiny. It's all very kind of, you know, it's like a great story. And with that spear, which was supposedly the spear that pierced the side of Jesus at the crucifixion, he could wield great power. And his method was to lure the Knights of the Grail into his... I don't know, Garden of Delights, and there were so many beautiful women, and they would all fall. And one of the major characters is called Amfortas, and he has this terrible wound from having given up his pledge, his oath. And much is centered around this fallen knight. But Klingsor, Hitler, that is, was a long ago fallen knight. And he was so bitter that he swore that he would lure the Knights of the Grail into their downfall. Now, you know, whether this is true or not, or any vestige of truth, I cannot account for that. But obviously he was a highly developed individual who later combined the powers of the Ajna Center and the Sacral Center to wield great power over whoever would listen to him. And he was, as we know, obsessed, possessed by a great evil entity, of which there are six leaders in the West and six in the East. So, you know, he certainly had his mind on purity, but the purity was projected outside himself. Well, you know, he was a vegetarian and other things. He had his mind on purity, but it was distorted, it was twisted, so that he began to attack others because of their so-called impurity when he himself had not managed. So I say around the second initiation, and I wouldn't want to say anything else, because even after the second initiation, one can deviate from the path and choose the left-hand path if one does not successfully pass the temptations in the desert. So I hope that, you know, gives a little orientation, and I would just be foolish if I tried to pinpoint that exactly, but I do think he was hovering around that initiation of purification, which was badly distorted in his mind because of his own sins previously. He said every one of those people surrounding Hitler, and he said the evil gang surrounding Hitler, every one of them had a past of very deep selfishness. He talks about that. I guess that's all I can say, Yvonne.
All right,
thank you. If I know more, I'll let you know. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. But it shows you, you know, we have to be on our guard because, okay, you know, your initiative the second degree, that doesn't mean you haven't overcome the power complex. And, you know, there were very few initiates of the third degree in the Tibetan group, Alice Bailey, Roberto Assagioli. I don't know of any more that could be confirmed as that. There were some who were taking the second degree, and he says, and so you see, we rate you highly. But people who take the second degree are not necessarily out of the woods. They have to go off by themselves. They have to confront their own dweller. They have to be rid of the world, the flesh, and the devil. And only then can be on the true Syrian path of initiation, which leads to the transfiguration. So, you know, I guess people will have to know themselves whether they're going through the experience in the desert, whether they have gone through it, or whether it is, you know, not yet a possibility. That's between the master and the student, and I don't think anyone else should interfere, you know, in assessment when it comes to that. Okay, Yvonne.
Thank you.
Okay, what? You bet. What else?
Frida's hand is raised.
Okay, I'm doing my best to look for hands. We've got a lot of people here tonight, which is... Oh, Frida. Okay, good. And there you go. Okay, Frida.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, hello? Indeed.
Okay. Yes. Michael, I'd asked this question before, and you said to come back to it when we got to Glamours of the Path. And that was a discussion of whether there's a distinction between, say, the Glamours of the Path and kind of the misappropriation. Usually we talk about that of being soul energy or the ray energy of the soul by the personality. But I think visualize misappropriation of the path, right?
Maybe I can address that because, you know, we're all souls for a long time, but we don't recognize it. And that soul energy is available sometimes in a personality distorted manner, even before we get on the path. So, you know, let's just say a lot of first-rate people in their soul are cruel in their personality. It just happens. And second-rate people can be simply... Wait a second, I'm hearing a lot of extra stuff. A lot of second-rate people are weak in their soul because the personality is simply misappropriating it. So my impression is that, what is that? What you got to do is sign off. There can be no, there's background noise. Okay. So look, okay. The misappropriation can occur at any time simply because you are a first ray, second ray, third ray soul, whatever. But you have to be on the path in order to experience the glamours of the path. And what I'm saying is that long before that happens, the misappropriation of soul ray energy can be part of it. Michael, do you know where I'm getting all this noise? Are you getting it too? There's some kind of...
It was coming from Frida's computer.
Oh. Okay.
So I muted her temporarily.
Okay. Good, because when it echoes back, you know, if you don't have the headset, it's going to be heard, and then it's going to create a feedback loop. So that's my impression of it, Frida. Misappropriation can happen at any time, even, you know, before you're sure of what the ray of the soul may be. It almost comes through the same way the personality ray comes through. But on the path, the glamours of the path can be experienced. And it's not, I mean, you can still misappropriate on the path, but there's less likelihood because you have the soul in sight as the higher of the pairs of opposites, and you are consciously trying to deal with its virtuous nature. So you may, you know, aspire, you may become inflated, you may do many things, but at least you're on the path. And the misappropriation, I believe, can occur well before that, because after all, for how long are we souls? We're souls for a long time. And the personality can still be in charge for part of that long time. So that's what I have to say about that. Did that somewhat address what you were looking for?
Okay, thanks. That's great.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, is it something that you think you may, you know, anyone may be going through? I mean, you know, let's just say you don't just have to be a second-rate personality to display weakness. One of the disadvantages of the second ray is weakness and vulnerability, and it can be displayed by a second ray soul long before the path is ever entered. And you know, you don't have to be a third ray personality to display manipulativeness. That can be displayed early on in the game and the act of scheming and all the rest of it, even before you care that you might have a third ray soul and are approaching the soul intelligently. So one comes before the other in my estimation. Okay, hopefully that is at least somewhat orienting. Okay, what else, if anything?
I am seeing no more hands or questions at this time.
Okay, okay. Or anything, you know, that has to do with occultism in general, because I always kind of, you know.
Alexandra just raised her hand.
Oh, okay, okay. Right, there you are, Alex, and there you are. Go ahead, Alex, go ahead.
Hello, hello. The glamour of war, power and money. It's just come out in the news, the world's richest 26 people own as much as the poorest 50%. So it seems that the glamour of economic power and the ensuing economic inequality in the world is something that we are facing. I'm not sure how it's going to be solved. In Britain, we understand now that there's economic reasons and groups behind this breaking up of the European Union, which looks very much like it's going to happen. And doesn't seem to be anything anyone can do to stop it, even though the will of the people, I think people are intelligent and are informed and know what's going on. And I know that the EU themselves, and from what things Donald Tusk has said himself, they understand what's behind it, breaking up the economic power of the European Union. And the Irish are coming into this a lot because of the problem about the Irish border. And recently a Sinn Féin leader said that two of the most significant agreements in the world of Europe today, one is the Good Friday Agreement, which brought peace to the two Irelands and to Britain, and two is the European Union itself, which has brought peace to the continent for 70 years, are now, this small group of people are prepared to completely rip those up as they push these countries over the edge. So my question is, what would DK say about this now? What?
Well, what? You know,
why is reason left all?
That I think he would say that we're on the verge of a great expansion of possibility due to the Centennial Conference, a point of great empowerment of the hierarchy. And before that occurs, every effort of the counterforce will be made to bring division and friction and antagonism and, you know, finally war into the mix, so that the meeting cannot have the power that it otherwise would have. Look, I've emphasized a lot, every process has three phases. This is a three-phase war. The First and Second World War were two phases of the same war, and the situation underground now, much more surreptitious, is the third phase. There is the counterattack, and let's see, you know, of course, he will I think one of the things he'll have to do and will do is analyze the last 80 years. From 19, well, maybe it will be 75 years, something like that. He will analyze what has happened, and we may have to wait for that, but I think there's no question. Thank you, by the way, for sending those two pictures. Alex sent me today a picture of Donald Tusk and a picture of this man, Mogg.
Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Jacob. Yeah, that's it. And and it's amazing contrast between...
the young men, yeah.
Yes, as young people, and one from a privileged elite and another rising through his own merit, and one representing a good path and the other representing the path of separatism. And it was just, a picture was really worth 1,000 words in that case. So if you want to put that or have that put in the chat box, that picture, that was an amazing revelation to me. Because, one of the most virulent enemies of the togetherness of the UK and the European Union is this little person with a monocle at the age of what, I don't know, but obviously born to privilege and not exactly having the milk of human kindness running in his veins. So, we are facing now the third phase of the war. This is what is going on, in my view, and let's just see whether at any point DK confirms it. He said, the forces of materialism will fight to the last ditch for their prerogatives. And this splitting up of things, this sending in of minor avatars of factionalism is all part of the problem. So, hold on to your seats for the next 6 years, and we have to do what can be done. Well, the power of united group meditation and doing the triangles work with great focus is extremely important. The kind of work we're doing here is important too, and guarding the consciousness so that while we work for goodwill and unity, we don't descend into hatred. He warns us about that all the time, the descent of the disciples into hatred, which is not allowed, but may seem justifiable at times. So what can we do? Let's just see.
Wow. Thank you for that. I've written it down.
Yeah. Okay. So, thank you. So be it. Anyway, you'll find a lot of this stuff in the externalization of the hierarchy, even in early days, as he is predicting the future after the war. And what really kind of agitated me a little bit is that it doesn't seem that we have fulfilled 10% of what he said had to be fulfilled after the war. So we're not really ready for the New World Order yet, and the forces of materialism are moving to fill in the vacuum. And all I can say is that every disciple has to find within himself, herself, the best possibility of working esoterically and exoterically simultaneously to forestall this drift into the lower elemental selfish life. Okay, thanks, Alex.
And thank you.
If you want to put that in the chat, it was really
amazing. I don't know how to post an image into the chat box, but I'll see.
Okay, I'll tell you what, send it to Michael. Okay. Or send it to BL or someone.
Oh, okay,
and they
I'll
can
send
do
it to them now. I'll send it to them.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
It's really a picture is worth 1,000 words in this case. I just was arrested by what I saw. So
I think the caption that goes with it, if I manage to post it, is that Donald Tusk, who is the president of the EU Council, was a carpenter's son from Poland. He grew up with gun battles on his street. He ran with anti-communist gangs. He was imprisoned by the Soviets. He helped Poland's solidarity and Poland to gain its autonomy. And he's now being criticized by the elite right wing because he said that I'm wondering what that special place in hell looks like for those who have promoted Brexit without even a sketch of a plan how to carry it out safely. So in other words, they have done everything to try to bring, you know, to try to keep this together, and have made every concession to try to keep the union together. And he's being excoriated for having made this statement out of exasperation, and now people in his defense have posted this. So everything is upside down. And
now it's I'm starting to
this reasonable answer to whether it's Venezuela or the United States or Britain, there's a reasonable answer, but reason seems to be the thing that the people in power do not want. So
well, don't you
it's
know?
Baffling.
We live in a post-truth era, don't we? You know, as it is said. Anyway, we still have 50 days left, something like that. Let's work. Let's work. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Okay. Now, what time is it? Oh, my goodness. It's later than I thought. Okay. Well, look, I'll tell you what. I think maybe it's time for us to get into our meditation. Let's do that. Next week, we will carry on that very interesting subject, which seemed to be beginning, you know, talking about the intuition and illumination. These are important factors. Look at this. A deep distrust of one's reactions to life and circumstance when such reactions awaken the call and call forth criticism, separativeness, or pride is of value. That's one of those golden sentences as we continue to observe our own reaction to world circumstances and even to what our fellow disciples or aspirants may be doing. If it calls forth criticism, separativeness, or pride, watch it, okay? The inner monitor is speaking. All right, friends, we'll go on now. And this is the formula. There it is. Okay. I have to All right. So we'll simply begin by entering the silence together and feel our presence with each other as we prepare to offer ourselves for group service. And all of this increases our confidence, as it must, that we are capable of actually doing something, because we work best when the sense of confidence is real and we are believing in the possibility of the formula we have been given. Now, the protective formula. Making the cross of divinity, which includes the eyes, and lighting the cross as you go. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. So see that cross before each of us and before the entire group considered as an instrument of the ashram. In this preparatory stage, we gather together the forms of light we need. The dual light, the vitality of matter raised to the level of mind. And the light of mind itself, reasonable, logical. Meeting with the light of matter. And the sense of contacting and recognizing soul light. And bringing that soul light down to blend with the two lesser lights. So the three lights, each with their own quality, are merged into one light from which the beam will go forth. So this triple light has vitality, reason, and soul quality within it. And then we say together, followed by the sacred word, the light is one, and in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Then we enter into the formula, and as we do so, we visualize the great searchlight going forth. This light will be shining upon the astral plane. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the needs. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work and turn the darkness into day. And we're going to strengthen the beam as we invoke the spiritual will. We know its source is the monad and atma, and the jewel and the lotus and the sacrifice petals. It descends. We imagine it descending and strengthening the beam. And we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. Now the glamour to be dissipated is named, and the light is thrown upon it. And that glamour, which can be interpreted in many ways, is the glamour of war. We pause for a moment first to understand what man has lost when succumbing to the glamour of war. Some wars have had to be fought, and they have the right motive behind them, but so many have been the result of ideology, the spirit of acquisition, the spirit of dominance, many false motives. Let's think together first about what humanity has lost through the unnecessary warring spirit when it is unnecessary. Now we will say together these words of power, visualizing as we do the dissipation of the glamour that we are contacting, the penetration into the glamour and its weakening and dissipation. Remember, that the beam is a beam of detection and a beam of destruction. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of war. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of war from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour of war. Now we will carry on in group silence with 5 minutes of intensity of purpose whilst this work is seen proceeding, each in his own way and yet part of the group process. they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. We withdraw our beam from the astral plane onto the mental plane. And we realize that work has been done. We also realize that for the New World Order, Master DK said that no nation will be allowed to produce any instruments of war, weaponry to be used against other nations will be forbidden. And we will sound the Om then, refocusing ourselves on the mental plane, in the light of the soul, the Om for the mind, for the astral body, and for the etheric physical body. And I recommend that we study the spirit of peace, a great extraplanetary entity with whom the Christ linked up even back in Palestinian days, we are told, and who is now part of the triangle in Shambhala, or working through Shambhala, that will protect and equip the Christ for his mission. A truly amazing entity, the Spirit of Peace, sometimes considered to be in relation to the first ray and sometimes the second. And before we close, we remind ourselves that the Christ cannot return until a measure of peace has been restored, and until the principle of sharing is well nigh in operation, and there being strong tendencies towards it in the governments of the world, and the house cleaning of political and religious organizations, that at least is underway. Okay, friends, thank you for attending our meditation. Tomorrow we have an evening Soul of Nations meditation, and then Sunday the same time, 8:00 p.m. attracting financial resources for the work of the hierarchy. I want to thank you for being here. And, you know, we make all of these programs available on Makara and many of them on the YouTube channel as well when there is a broadcast from YouTube. So we have plenty to study, plenty about which to meditate, and plenty to apply. And let's work very hard to see if some kind of division of the European Union can be avoided. I believe it is the will of the Master R that it be so, and behind him the Christ and the Spirit of Unity, and behind that Sanat Kumara himself. So lots of love, many blessings, and we'll see you before long. Bye-bye.